Now, you're already giving off to me for making reference to Bobby Sands on this programme. How did I better get my exact form of words, because I did say earlier, the documentary about Bobby Sands, 66 Days, is it glorifying terrorism or a picture of a death, or a true picture of a death of an IRA volunteer? Quite a few people have already criticised me for using the word terrorism. Let me speak to Alex Kane, who has seen the documentary. Alex, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Alex, appropriate in this day and age to remind people that Northern Ireland does have a terrorist past, or has that word been eradicated from vocabulary?
No, it hasn't been eradicated, and I think you're right. The use of the word is a divisive word, in the sense that people have very particular views of what the word means, and some will not like it being applied in some cases, but will be happy enough for it to be applied in others. That's part, I think you and I talked about this maybe 6-7 weeks ago, there's a lot of unfinished business in Northern Ireland. A lot of people still not settled, a lot of people still not 100% sure we have a genuine peace political process, that we're transforming ourselves. So yes, a lot of these issues are still quite literally red rags to bulls. They really do offend people one way or the other. And that's going to go on for a very long time yet, Frank.
There is no doubt Bobby Sands, the best known name in the Provisional IRA. A considerable number of people would see the Provisional IRA as a terrorist organisation. Yet and all, if you walk the Falls Road and you look at the mural, you see an iconic hero who gave his life for Irish freedom. That's another perspective on Bobby Sands.
It is, and I think in this odd way that we are in Northern Ireland, both of those are actually valid interpretations of the man. There are many people, I met them on Saturday night when I was at the premiere of the film, of people who thought that this was a film about someone they regard as a hero. And whether you like it or not, Frank, and I come from a unionist background, so I have a great deal of discomfort with terrorism on both sides of the fence, to be honest. But someone who starves themselves, who chooses for political reasons to embark upon a personal course like that, which is likely to lead to his death, and a very painful, someone described it as the most intimate form of pain there is, starving yourself to death. It takes a certain, maybe it's madcap courage, maybe it's delusional ideological courage, whatever it is, it takes a certain amount of courage to do that. But also in the context of what happened then, those 66 days, whether or not you like Bobby Sands, whether or not you regard him as a hero, whatever your views of the IRA, the army, unionism, republicanism may be, the simple historical fact, and that's what we have to deal with, the simple historical fact is that those 66 days and the consequences of those 66 days changed Northern Ireland and changed Northern Ireland politics.
In the 66 days, in this documentary, does it come across at all how he managed to actually be a hunger striker who would starve himself actually to death? And of course, he was the first of 10 to do it. I've had this actual discussion with other people, including actually with my wife, because we're in the bizarre position of both having gone to school with hunger strikers. I went to school with Raymond McCreesh, and my wife went to school with Kevin Lynch. And the one thing we would agree on is that we would never have seen a hunger striker or even an IRA volunteer or terrorist, whatever you want to call them, we would never have seen them in the people when we knew them as younger individuals. Yet and all, at some point in their life, they were prepared to get involved in an organisation which killed people and killed innocent people, and they were themselves, at the height of it, prepared to kill themselves for what they believed in. No matter how much I discuss it, I cannot get an understanding of what motivates people to do that. And you begin to wonder, were they manipulated?
I think that's actually a fascinating question, Frank, and I've written about that over the years. We talk about, oddly enough nowadays, about young people across Europe who go to the Middle East. We talk about the process of radicalization, that somehow people who led up until that point normal circumstances, some of them middle class, some of them had no truck with anything to do with violence or criminality, something triggered, quite literally triggered, changed them. We saw that process in Northern Ireland in the late 60s and 70s on both sides, where people, young men and women, who if you look at their school backgrounds, if you look at their family backgrounds, if you look at their lifestyles, everything about them, something happened. They were radicalized to the point where they thought it was legitimate, really honestly believed it was morally legitimate to lift a brick or a bomb or a gun. And whether it was to join a loyalist paramilitary organization or to join the IRA, they believed it was the right thing to do. I have no idea what that. I was born 55, so I was hitting 13, 14. I knew people that I was at school with, Frank, who ended up involved with loyalist paramilitaries. They're just ordinary kids that I knew. I have no idea. I grew up in a political background. My father, very senior Orange man, connected to the Ulster Unionist Party, election agent to Sir Norman Strong, the former Speaker, who was later assassinated along with his son Jim by the IRA. I have no idea why I went down one route, which was to try and write and set out unionism from 1%, why other people took another route. We'll never know that. That is what radicalisation is about. You've no idea why people do it. And you're right, whether it's starving yourself to death, anyone from any side, and this actually applies to the police, it applies to army, loyalist power. I'm not saying there's any equivocations, so please don't phone in anyone and tell me I'm trying to. I'm not. I'm simply saying that anyone who joins any organisation, be it the legitimate security forces or a paramilitary organisation, knows that there are risks involved, knows that there's a fair chance they will either be imprisoned if they're on the paramilitary side or killed. So why? Why do they do it? We will just maybe in some cases never know, Frank. Maybe it's just something motivates them to think, yes, I am doing this for my country. This is how I serve my country. I don't know what that process is. I know that during my lifetime, incidents have made me very, very angry and enraged. I've sometimes sat and screamed in anger. I've had friends killed. But I've never at any point got to that moment when I tipped and said, no, I'm giving up the writing. I'm giving up the political activism. I am lifting a gun. I am going to help. I've never crossed that line. I don't know why people do, but it's clear we know they do. But how you explain, as you say, your classmates, you couldn't have picked them out and said, oh, he'll certainly, if there's ever anything, he'll definitely. You just don't know.
It is bizarre. Is it a film? Is it a documentary that we should go and see? Or do we run the risk of reliving something that we should be putting out of our memory? Do we run the risk of having additional sympathy for Bobby Sands that we may not have had in the past? Or might we go and think, yeah, it's very balanced, that, actually. And in fairness, it calls it as it really was.
That, again, that's an extraordinarily difficult thing to answer, Frank, simply because people... I was going to say, actually, oddly enough, and the piece I wrote in the newsletter about it yesterday, I went to premiere on Saturday. There were a number of Sinn Féin MLAs there, the number of people with Republican backgrounds, some of whom former prisoners in that H block with Bobby Sands, knew him, about a couple of former hunger strikers there as well. I talked to some of them afterwards, and as I said in the piece, some of them were uncomfortable with it, actually said, you know, well, this is, one that said to me, well, it's not the Bobby I remember, it's not the true story, it's not exactly as I recall it. So it was quite clear, and as I noted in the article, some of them looked a little bit uncomfortable. It's almost like they were rethinking, because we all have set in stone opinions of what we think of something, and sometimes it takes someone else to say, well, actually, here's a different perspective. And certainly when I looked at it, you know, I looked at it from the perspective, you know, I think some Republicans would have seen Bobby Sands as a great hero. This is a man who starves himself to death for our beliefs. And I raised the question. I said, you know, did he? You know, did he die in vain? Did he die to see? I mean, and he's quoted somewhere saying, you know, I joined the IRA with an M1 carbine and a heart full of hatred, wanting to topple the world. This is a man, and a number of other lines where he said, you know, I wanted the British out. I wanted to unite. I wanted, you know, see. Did he die to see Martin McGuinness serve as Deputy First Minister to Ian Paisley, Peter Robinson, Arlene Foster, and for the Union to be fairly well rooted? We don't know the answer to that question. We don't know whether, had he still been alive, he would have supported the peace process. And the other thing that's worth remembering about Bobby Sands, and this is the historical side of this, when he began that hunger strike on the 1st of March 1981, and this was a few months after there had been a previous hunger strike, where none of them had died, they'd called it off. So there would have been an expectation, and I've talked to people on a number of sides about this, who have said to me, you know, Alex, when this started, the expectation probably was that these guys, the 10 of them who started over that few weeks, it would have been called off at some point. It wouldn't lead to this. Circumstances took over. The death of Frank McGuire, the independent Member of Parliament for Fermanagh South Tyrone. So say Bobby Sands began this as just another prisoner who might or might not have given up. Nobody can tell. But within a matter of weeks, he had become a member of Parliament.
Just on that, for people who aren't familiar with Frank McGuire, he died of a heart attack. This caused a by-election, and Bobby Sands stood. Only two people, one stood against the other, and Bobby Sands won it from his hospital bed.
That's absolutely right. That changed. Frank McGuire died on the 5th of March, And nobody had known this. There was no history of Frank Maguire being ill or of any heart trouble or anything like that. He just quite literally dropped dead. That changed all the circumstances. There's a moment, and that, this is what politics is always about, Frank. This is what history is about. No one who started that hunger strike could have known that this was going to happen. There was no election in the offing. They just had thought this would probably peter out in the background, wouldn't get much publicity. Suddenly, within a couple of weeks of that, Bobby Sands has gone from being a hunger striker to being a candidate for Westminster. Again, so basically it was an anti-unionist candidate versus a unionist guy. Harry West was the unionist candidate. That's what it was. That's front page story across the United Kingdom, across Ireland. It suddenly became front page story across the world. So suddenly, and don't forget, as I said earlier, there'd been a hunger strike a few months earlier. Barely garnered any publicity outside parts of West Belfast and across Northern Ireland. Nowhere else. Suddenly, this hunger striker, this man, Bobby Sands, became a worldwide figure. And that changed, context changed everything. And as I said in the article, and as it hints at in the film, we're not sure. Did at that point Bobby Sands himself just become a tool in a much bigger operate, no longer in control of his own agenda, no longer just a guy saying this, I'm starving to death because, or I'm willing to starve to death if we don't get political status. Suddenly it became different from that. Suddenly it was a whole different political agenda with America at play, Europeans at play, international peace commissioners at play. All of these factors suddenly folded into this one, what had been a fairly simple, standard, run-of-the-mill drama. And I don't wish that to sound insulting, so please, again, anyone who's listening from the Republican, I'm just simply saying, from a journalist writing point of view, that's how this was seen, just as another local, internal Northern Ireland matter. Suddenly, it became a huge, huge story, and that changed everything.
So we'll never know where he would have gone politically. We see him, or we're led to believe he was an intelligent, articulate man, and he probably would have been someone who would have been equally as capable as the likes of Gerry Kelly to be a public representative. He may have even, if he had lived, gone on to be a more senior member of Sinn Féin. All of these things are possible, but we'll never know if Bobby Sands would have done what Martin McGuinness has done. And Martin McGuinness, of course, highly profiled former member of the Provisional IRA. The idea that Bobby Sands might have gone to meet the Queen and shaken hands with the Queen, it's a question that hangs out there, and you wonder, might Bobby Sands, had he survived the hunger strike, might he have met the Queen at some time in his life? When you go back to 1981, it's almost impossible to believe that Martin McGuinness has been shaking hands with the Queen.
Well, you've summed it up there, Frank, and that's what it's hinted at in the film, and it's what I touched upon in the article. You know, we don't know. Bobby Sands, we don't know. I don't know. None of us will ever know whether when Bobby Sands started that on March the 1st, 1981, whether he thought this is going to end in my death, or whether he thought it's going to be like the guys a few months ago and the guys a few months before that. It'll run for a while and they'll get bored, the tactical change, or something will happen, they'll find a way out. We don't know. We don't know, had he survived, whether he would have supported the peace process. But you're right, Frank. Look at Martin McGuinness. Look at Gerry Adams. Look at Ian Paisley. Look at Peter Wright. If anyone, and funnily enough, I remember writing a piece. I'm going to blow my own trumpet slightly here. I remember writting a piece at the beginning. It was January 2000. I wrote a piece for the newsletter, in which I said it looked to me, because the SDLP and the Ulster Unionists were having enormous trouble getting the Belfast Agreement, getting the work out, getting the assembly set up and the executive and so on. And I remember writing a piece in which I said, the next logical conclusion here to tie this down is for the DUP and Sinn Féin to conclude their own deal and, in essence, take over this process. And I got dog's abuse from Sinn Féin and from the DUP, and also from this could never happen, this is not possible. Alex, do you really expect, are you really saying, Alex, that Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams will cut a deal with themselves? And I said, well, I'm just talking about logically. I don't see where else. Either this collapses or these guys change. And that is the nature of all history. It's the nature of all politics, Frank. If you look back at 1981, that hunger strike, if you look back at 1969, look back at 1998, choose any date at random and say, could you have imagined that in 2016, these guys would have been sitting, that Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster, Arlene, who used to be in the party I used to belong to, that these two would be sitting governing Northern Ireland. So if you had said to me right now, if Bobby Sands had lived, Alex, could you, knowing what you know of him, knowing what you've read of him, is it possible that he could now be in Martin McGuinness's role, that he could now be Deputy First Minister? I have to say, Frank, I have no idea, and none of us do. And that's one of the things, for all the criticisms people will have about this film, and I accept those criticisms. Some of them are valid, things are glossed over that probably shouldn't, but that wasn't what the film was about. This was a film about why would a man in a certain circumstance do a certain thing. But if you're asking whether this man would have been happy with the peace process, whether this man would have said, no, I'm not signing up to any deal involving an internal settlement, none of that we know. And that's why it's worth looking. That's why it's so many questions. Like what you do, Frank, asking these questions, they're worth asking. Because in most cases, none of us, it goes back to your original question, how did your young classmates become radicalized? How did some of my young classmates become radicalized? I have no idea. All I know is that they did. And people who 30, 40 years ago told me that it was never possible to work with other people in Northern Ireland are now working with them. That's the nature of life. It's the nature of politics. Everything changes all the time.
Alex, good speaking to you. Thanks for coming on. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Take care.
Political commentator Alex Kane, who obviously has seen 66 Days, the documentary about Bobby Sands. Maybe you've already been at one of those previews. I'd love your opinion on it. 90-333-105. Gregory Campbell has been writing about it in today's newsletter, highly critical. At some point, he gives a few words of comfort to the filmmakers, I think towards the end of his article. He says, in the mad Alice in Wonderland world of words and video clips, meaning exactly what a film director wants them to mean, 66 Days makes good dramatic viewing, if overly long, but it is a million miles away from an accurate depiction of what happened during those harrowing days in 1981. If it is up for awards, it should not be in the real life drama section, that's for sure. I think the best thing that he said about it is indeed that it does have some dramatic effect. So suggestion that maybe it is worth watching, but he makes the point that I think it's 16 minutes into the film before there's any reference made at all to the activities of the Provisional IRA. Right, this is the Frank Mitchell phone-in. Good morning to you. 90-333-105 077-66-105-105. Talking about Bobby Sands and 66 Days.
I am a political prisoner because I am a casualty of a perennial war that is being fought between the oppressed Irish people and an alien, unwanted regime that refuses to withdraw from our land.
Bobby Sands was serving a 14-year prison term on a weapons possession charge, had been demanding special status as a political prisoner. A number of other Irish Republican Army members have joined Sands in his protest and are also well into a hunger strike.
This was drama at the absolute rawest edge that it could possibly be.
You couldn't ask for a more hostile environment.
Bobby Sands is putting on a performance for the world, for his cause. That is the cause that has murdered people.
We are not prepared to give in to blackmail in the form of a hunger strike or of any other form of pressure.
The Frank Mitchell phone-in on U105. Listening to you.